Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Friday Feels, Justine's version. I am Justine, the host of this podcast, here to nerd out about all things self-care with a capital S, boundary setting, and stress management. Today, what I wanted to talk about is this little thing called active recovery. I, in my, framework for self-care and boundary setting, I like to talk about the four R's to help assess your capacity when it comes to showing up for yourself and for others. And the second R in there is recovery. What I don't really go into in the blog post and podcast episode about recovery is this little area of nuance called active recovery. And that's because I didn't totally, I mean, I've like written about active recovery in the past, but I wasn't completely clear on how it totally fit into my framework. But I'm more clear about that now, and I'm going to explain why. So, one of the things that I've started to find about myself as I get older is that I am a lot happier being wrong than I used to be. I even say that I love being wrong sometimes. Not always, but when it comes to like a previously established like thought or belief that I've had, and then I learn new information that leads me to rethink said belief. I really have come to appreciate those opportunities to eat crow, as my grade school basketball coach once said. So yeah, it's not as much that I love being wrong as much as I love learning more information that makes me rethink what I had previously believed or understood to be true, especially when it increases my understanding of a subject matter. So an example of this is that in 2014, I read a book called Mind Over Medicine by Dr. Lisa Rankin because I wanted to better understand the way that the body heals beyond the biology of cellular repair that I learned in school. Since reading the book, I have more or less said in my work that the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems can't fire at the same time because that's what the book laid out and that's how science understood it at the time. But I kind of like, yes, that made sense. And the more that I learned about stress and recovery, the less accurate that felt because what about active recovery? And that's kind of what I want to dive in a little bit more today. Because, I know, for example, like when I'm consistent with my movement practice, I get stronger, and then the activities that used to make me sore the next day barely have me breaking a sweat. Like it's still work, but it's not as stressful. Or when I learned how to regulate my emotional reactions in the moment, it's still an ongoing practice, but I used to be very reactive to my feelings until I learned how to be mindful of and unpack my internal stress cycle. The more that I practice that skill, the more I'm able to actively calm my internal environment, even though the external stresses are still happening. So, as I put the theory of stress management or the stress and relaxation into practice, I found a gap that I couldn't quite wrap my head around, where like I knew I was still feeling stress in my body, but I was also recovering as I went. So that is, and I'm gonna, I was familiar with the term of active recovery from going to spin class, and I'm gonna get into that. But yeah, it was just that that concept of active recovery didn't perfectly fit into the framework that I'd been operating with. So all of that to say, I was very relieved when I recently learned that the way that the medical and scientific communities talk about stress and recovery has shifted a little bit. So, one of the things that I do for work is I'm a writer and relationship builder for Startup Parent. And as part of that work, I get to lurk on some of the podcast interviews that they do. So, and like take notes. I'm not like the guest knows I'm there. I'm not secretly eavesdropping, but it's just something I get to do. So, I was on one of those interviews with the host, Sarah Peck, and her guest, Dr. Pooja Lakshmin, author of Real Self-Care, a book that is out now, coming out at the end of this month. And Pooja shared something that had me doing all the jazz hands. Because she said that instead of thinking of the nervous system as having an on and off switch, which is what we previously kind of understood, it's more helpful to think of it as a dial. So knowing that, I'm very happy to correct the way that I've positioned recovery in the past, because once you know better, you do better. And with that, I wanted to share a little piece that is on the bloggity blog called Spin Class Active Recovery and Emotional Self-Care. Because after having this realization about the stress and relaxation dials and kind of like turning them up and down and it not being an on and off switch, it had me revisiting this piece about active recovery that I originally wrote in fall of 2022. So, oh man, that wasn't even that long ago, though it feels like it. So anyway, took that piece, put it on the blog. If you want to check it out, it is justinesoans.com/blog/active-recovery. So the first time I went to a spin class, I thought I was going to die. I swear my life flashed before me while I clung desperately to the bike I was clipped into in a small dark room with a bunch of sweaty strangers while top 40s blared from the speakers. I was sweating buckets. My heart had never pumped so hard or fast, and I thought my legs were going to give out from the exertion. It's actually possible that they did give out, and I didn't notice because I was physically attached to the bike, clipped into those pedals, and that weighted flywheel was just going with me. So obviously I survived, but I swore that I was never going to go back and voluntarily subject myself to that kind of physical agony again. Shortly after that, I started working at Lululemon and got invited on sweat dates, which is going to classes with friends and getting very sweaty. I didn't want to say no to these sweat dates because I had just moved to a new city, got this new job, and I really wanted to meet people. I was too proud to admit defeat by exercise bike, and my new friends seemed to really buy into the spinning thing, so I kept going back and eventually fell in love with the sweaty dancing on a stationary bike. So at my peak fitness, I'd been spinning for a few years and I was training to become an instructor. I was going much faster with way more resistance than that first ride. And I was still sweating buckets. My heart had never pumped so hard or fast, and I thought my legs would give out from the exertion. The biggest difference was that my active recovery had improved dramatically. So even though I'd been practicing for years, it never like officially got easy, but I got better at recovering while I worked. Now, coming back to kind of that 4 hours framework, I talk about recovery a lot as a self-care practice. And if this is the first you're hearing me say the 4 hours, just like pop back a couple podcast episodes and check out the series. So recovery is the ongoing practice of identifying your needs, then taking the necessary actions to meet them and fill your cup. When we think about recovery, the first thing that comes to mind is usually rest in the form of sleep, naps, massages, hot baths or showers, meditation, all activities that require you to kind of stop and be still. But here's the thing. I have two kids, two dogs, and two geckos who also have needs and are my responsibility. There are times that I need recovery, but they also need my attention, and it's hard to navigate those competing needs, especially because they're constantly fluctuating. So sometimes we can't stop all the way to recover. We're strapped to that bike. And sometimes we don't actually need to. That's part of where this whole self-care and boundary setting thing comes in. And that like stack of self-care cups. Because it's so helpful when I can tune into my inner environment and figure out the kind of recovery I need to regulate and get back to being my best self. So that means checking in and seeing, do I need to fully stop and get rest? Or do I just need to slow down? Because it's a fine line between the tension of growth and the rupture from pushing too far. And we have to tune into our feelings to be able to find those boundaries. Experience can be a harsh, but very effective teacher. So the way that spin class really taught me about active recovery is because each spin class began in a similar fashion. The instructor would review the positions on the bike, the hand positions. There was like one, two, or three. We would find our flat road and set an intention for the class. So the flat road, actually, I'll get into that in a second. In this introduction, we were, not only making sure that we were safe with the bike, but we were also asked to check in with ourselves so that we could show up and honor our body's needs. So the instructor always said something to the effect of, you know, if you're here to push yourself today, then, you know, I'm here to give you the prompting, but it's up to you to push yourself a little bit harder. At the same time, if what you need is recovery today, then don't be afraid to ease off the tension. So it was always about the instructor being there to harness the energy of the class, to make recommendations, but ultimately the practice of the 45 minutes was about tuning into our body and meeting ourselves where we were at. So recovering in that context, just so you know, didn't mean stopping. That's the thing, because our feet are clipped into the bike, right? So it didn't mean stopping, and it also didn't mean no effort. Because when you're on a spin bike, it's a bad idea to push zero tension, especially if your legs are moving quickly, because there isn't the muscle contraction to provide stability for your joints. That makes it really easy to hyperextend your knee and get hurt. That's why at the start of the class, when we were kind of figuring out all the positions and stuff, then the instructor would tell us to find the spot of having no tension just for a moment, and then to add just a little bit of weight to the flywheel until we could feel our legs engaged. That was called finding our flat road. Like when you're riding a real bike and you're on a flat road, or you're out for a run and you take a break to walk. The effort's minimal, but it's still there. And that's where we would find our resting place during the class, is just above the flat road. So it was something that when we were pushing a lot of effort and that heart rate was increasing and we felt like we were losing our breath, we could slow down and for active recovery until that heart rate came down, but we didn't get off the bike. We didn't stop pushing tension. We kept going and we were recovering. So that pocket of time where my heart rate went from the peak exertion levels back down to almost resting while I was still actively pushing tension, that measures my active recovery. So if it takes me like 2 minutes for my heart rate to come down when I first start the classes, and then after I've been going for a long time, it takes 30 seconds for my heart rate to come down while I'm still doing the class, then that means that my active recovery has improved by a minute and a half. So the longer I went to classes, the shorter that active recovery time got. I was able to push myself harder in the points of exertion, and then I could slow down to my flat road to get some rest and be ready to go again more quickly. And I also found that my flat road recovery zone, the more that I practiced, that recovery zone happened with more tension on the bike than it used to. So my body started to recognize what used to be effort as rest. So even though the effort in the moment never felt easy on the bike, my body's ability to recover got so much better as my capacity increased and I got stronger, both in the spin studio and out in the wild. So when I went for a run, I spent more time running and less time walking, if I had a good spin practice. I was also more attuned to my body and got better at meeting myself where I was at. So I learned how to settle into the temporary discomfort of the effort without pushing injury, and my body learned how to recover on the go. So again, with that consistent practice, it's not that the work got easier, but I got stronger. And over time, what used to ruin me became my warm-up. And so that was a measure of my overall fitness improving. Now, I really want to note here that you can't rely on active recovery forever. Like, eventually you have to get off the bike. So this is just a, not a channel. What's the word I'm looking for? Level. This is a something that you can engage in. Oh, come on, brain. What's the word? A gear? It's a gear that you can engage in, but you don't stay in it all the time. So being able to engage in active recovery, you know, being able to go to a spin class and push yourself and all of that jazz, it depends on you having reserves. If you're barely holding it together, like getting through the day, then going and pushing yourself at a 60-minute spin class is not a great idea. You have to have the energy to get there. So if you're in full-on retreat mode, that first R where like shit is hitting the fan, then you need full-on recovery practices. You actually need to stop so that you don't do more injury. What that means in those cases is that what is normally your flat road might actually register as exertion, and that's okay. So this growth, quote unquote growth, isn't always this like upward trajectory that unless you're getting stronger, it doesn't count, because there's always, you know, setbacks and ups and downs along the way. So the way that you honor your needs, whether that means active recovery or that means full-on recovery, depends on the moment. So it's not that you always do the same thing, it's that you're always meeting your needs and where you're at right now. That's what sustainable, intentional self-care is all about. Now, let's talk a little more about active recovery and practice, because like spinning and run walking are just a couple examples of how active recovery can function in the physical body. As in, like in those activities, you can actually feel your heart rate decreasing and your breath slowing down with less effort. But that practice of exertion and recovery holds true in other areas of self-care as well. And actually, that just reminded me, this isn't in the blog, but when I was pregnant with my first kid, one of the things that I worried about was stress and the impact of stress on the pregnancy. And what I learned was that stress itself is not bad for the baby as long as you recover from it after the fact, which isn't that familiar, just like humans. And what was actually also really interesting was that the baby in utero learns stress resilience from the mother. So as I would get stressed and have those hormones flood my body, then because we would share a blood supply, then my kid would also experience that rush of hormones, which means that then when I recovered and the balancing came into play, then he also was delivered those balancing hormones. And what it does is primes their body to know that after stress comes relaxation or recovery. So I just thought that that was very interesting. So yeah. That was the point of that. But what I want to get to is that this actual like exertion recovery practice holds true in your physical body and in other zones as well. So, for example, writing is a way that I tend to my mental and emotional well-being as an active recovery self-care practice. It's like it feels good for the mental accomplishment part of my brain to wrap up a piece. Because for me, mental self-care has a lot to do with that sense of like making progress, feeling completion, like that project-oriented stuff. So when I'm writing, it's mental self-care when I actually get through beginning to end. And the practice of putting the words on the page allows me to sort through the emotional chaos of feelings in my body, and the overwhelm of thoughts in my brain so that I can actually get to the specific needs and the root of those feelings. So it meets both of those care needs, but sitting down to write is never really an easy process. Some days the words come together more easily than others, but it's never easy. I've just gotten better at seeing it through the more that I plant my butt in the chair or on the bed or on the floor or on the bike, wherever it is I choose to write. But over time, with practice, I've gotten better at using writing as a tool to excavate and organize my thoughts and feelings. It's always work because that's part of the growth, just like spinning always makes me sweat. But the process has been transformational because when I've, put in those reps of sifting through my thoughts and feelings about any given situation in a controlled environment, like, pen to paper or word to processor, then after I put in that effort, then I'm better prepared to navigate the tension or conflict as it arises in the real world. So it creates a safe place to practice, naming what's going on for me. And communicating it so that when those situations come up in real life, I know that I've put the words in order and I've tried them on and they sound right, or at least, as correct as possible. And then we test them in the dynamic and then revisit the work if needed. But yeah, it's just like that writing to be like the pre-work for emotional and mental dynamics is the same. It's similar to how hours of spinning prepared me to, run a half marathon, because that effort of, in the case of spinning, it was the exertion to increase the heart rate and then the recovery. That physiological process in my body is the same as the recovery for running. So by spinning, I was prepared for the activity of running a half marathon. In the same way, when I do the work of sorting through my thoughts and feelings as an act of self-care, whether that's writing or whether that's therapy, it is not the exact same as navigating tension with a person in real life, but it uses some of the same neural pathways and stuff. So, in that way, it prepares you for it and is healing and is work. So growth requires tension and healing, and neither of those processes are easy. Physically, that growth and healing looks like, muscles growing in size as a result of repairing micro tears at the tissue level. Like you lift weights, you create micro tears. The body sends like the kicks in the healing mechanism, repairs those micro tears, and the muscles grow in the process. Emotionally, that work looks like facing and resolving conflict internally and externally to develop more depth and strength in relationships. So what that looks like, on the bike, I had to realize when I was at the point that I didn't have my breath, or it felt like my heart was going to beat out of my chest, or I couldn't feel my legs anymore. That was the limit of my physical ability in that moment. And then I needed to lay off the tension so that I could do some active recovery. Heart rate could come down, blah, blah, blah. And then I could go in again. In the cases of mental or emotional, it means that I'm able to recognize the limit of my ability to communicate or be in an emotion during a conversation. And I can regulate in the moment with active recovery, or dial down the tension and create the space to recover. So what that looks like is being able to step away from the stressor, like recognize the feeling, step away from the stressor, identify the thoughts and stories that are coming up as a result of the feelings, and then make a conscious choice about what to do next. And that's as opposed to reacting from a defensive place, which is what happens when we aren't able to manage our stress. So what that, would look like in practice is like my husband and I are both, primarily self-employed, exclusively self-employed. And so we do a lot of schedule navigation and management depending on the demands that either of us have with any given project on the go. So because he works in film, a lot of the projects are very consuming, which means that over the years, there's been a lot of strategic imbalance in terms of how we divide time, energy, resources, whatever, to accomplish the work that needs to get done. Like we're on the same team, we're working towards what's good for our family, for our household. And that means responsibilities shift from along the way from time to time. So as we're coming up to a project that's going to be particularly consuming for him, then which also means it's going to be consuming for me in a different way, we were trying to talk through ways to manage some of the stressors that are going to be at play. So while the conversation was a, pretty tactical, logical one, like pulling out calendars, figuring out pickup and drop off, deadlines, blah, 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 the place that I was reacting from was a lot of feeling of the, like, assuming the larger responsibility for the domestic and kid stuff, because, doing the pickup and drop off and the lunches and blah, 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 like, it's basically solo work parenting, solo parenting while the other person works for a while, which is daunting. And it's doable. I've done it before, and I'll do it again. I'm very capable. And the prospect of it just felt like a lot. And so I was like having some tears because all of my emotions are hardwired to my tear ducts. And even though he was being very supportive and positive in his suggestions, I had to stop and be like, hey, I really appreciate the like proactivity here, and I'm just feeling really overwhelmed by this feeling of, sadness or whatever it was. So can we just like put a pause on this for a hot minute and then come back to it? And then we did. And then when we did come back to it, I was able to say, those suggestions aren't going to actually help the thing. But what would be helpful is if I have this pocket of recovery time on the other side. So now that's the solution that we're talking about. And so all of that within the context of emotional and, mental active recovery is knowing that the goal of stepping away from it was to return. It was to do a better job of it. And I just wasn't going to be able to do it while my feelings were so elevated. So I was still in the conversation, and it was work to say, hey, I can feel that I'm getting flooded, blah, blah, blah. But then on the other side of it, we were able to keep going, and it didn't involve, shutting down the conversation or anything like that. So the point is that when I am assessing, like connected with and assessing my own mental and emotional well-being, based on that cup of self-care and that's the stack of self-care cups, when I'm assessing that so that I can figure out the kind of self-care I need, then measuring my active recovery has been a really helpful tool in determining capacity. The more I'm able to remain with myself and stay calm during moments of conflict, the better my reserves, because maintaining that level of chill is so much more work than it looks like. Emotional regulation is a lot of work. If I'm unable to regulate in the moment, I'm tuning in and realizing like I'm losing control of these feelings, or like if my fuse is really short because of a lot of other stressors at play, then I know I need to build in some more intentional recovery practices and maybe even practice repair as needed. So active recovery is, on the spectrum of those 4 R's. And the point is knowing where you're at in the moment and what's going to meet that need. Now, recovery matters so much because it allows us to honor our feelings and needs so that we can get to resolution instead of getting stuck in the emotional riptide that neglected feelings perpetuate. Again, the unprocessed feelings, it's like they stack and will like explode. It's like a pressure, whatever, like a geyser. That neglected feelings will spill over if we don't deal with them. So, and that's when damage is done. So sometimes we need full and complete rest to meet those recovery needs. And other times we rely on active recovery. So we have to do the regulation work in the moment. Either just, we have capacity for that and that's what feels good, or sometimes just because we have to kind of keep going. The recovery doesn't always feel good, but it does lead to better outcomes because it's only when we honor our feelings and set healthy boundaries that allow us to meet our needs that we can truly build reserves and develop the capacity to support the people we love and then ultimately create the meaningful change that we're after. So this is a practice. This is the work. And don't expect it to get easier, but trust that you'll get better at it. I know that sitting down to write still feels like work every single time that I do it, even though it's a regular self-care practice of mine. Getting on the spin bike or going for a run still makes me sweat and gasp for breath. And asking for help when I need it still requires a deep breath and a prayer of courage. Because in the tension of growth and repair, fear consistently shows up, resistance shows up, criticism shows up, shame shows up. The point isn't happiness in the face of that side of the coin. It's trusting that the other side is there, even when you can't see it, and taking steps towards it anyway. And a healthy self-care practice helps you get better at rolling with the punches and hopefully sticking the landing. And that's where you learn to hold your ground so you can stand up for the things that really matter. That's the revolution. So this is hard work because it's supposed to be. And it's a good thing you can do hard things. And those are my thoughts on active recovery. I hope that it was helpful to listen to those musings. The, most important takeaway is that the practice is about creating the space to listen to yourself and figure out the needs that those feelings are pointing to so that you can find ways to meet them. And that's when you can show up for the rest of your life and the people in it in whole and healthy ways. So if you would like to get these goods delivered to your digital letterbox, you can sign up for my email newsletter, The Friday Feels, at bit.ly/thefridayfeels. That's bit.ly/thefridayfeels. And they're bi-weekly emails about setting boundaries, practicing self-care, and building healthy relationships. I was about to say they're a lot of fun for me to write. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're a lot of work for me to write. But it's really just, I sit down at the end of the week and kind of write what I'm going through, and how it influences the work that I'm doing and all that jazz. And then it's after, I've shared things on the Friday Feels newsletter list that they start to make their way out into the public, via the podcast, or, every once in a while I post on social media, not often. Anyway, that is all for now. As per always, thank you for being here. There are so many podcasts that you could give your attention to, and I appreciate that you have given it to me today. So you can, as always, learn more about my work at justinesoans.com. Again, the newsletter, The Friday Feels, goes out every other Friday, bit.ly/thefridayfeels. And you can find links to all the things at justinesoans.com/links. That's all. Thank you. Bye.